First one is Dan.
It's 2 minutes.
I always have to sit in the wrong spot. I'm Dan. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
You know, I'm amazed with the panels today. This is the first blending of time that the old-time panel has done what they were asked. And I got to applaud everybody for that. You know, part of that is the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I go up and do something that they've asked me not to, am I really exercising unity? I don't think so. I'm telling people I'm a little better. Everything we do in our life after we get to Alcoholics Anonymous is going to reflect on the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous. If we're at a business meeting and we're given some big spiel about some brilliant idea of ours and we haven't investigated it or anything, and we're going to get it through no matter what it takes, and we're going to fight and fume, that's not the AA way. If we're going to grab a coffee pot and go with a resentment and go start another meeting, all we're doing is starting two meetings with resentments. That's not unity. What we're supposed to do is we're supposed to learn how to live with one another. We're supposed to learn how to give and take. We're supposed to learn that when we do things that we have to do, it's selfish. And so, you know, being an alcoholic, now what I've found is it's harder as time goes along to do those things because we start, number one, we get to feel like we got to write a passage. We don't. Number two, we feel like we've learned so much that we're going to share whether the next guy gets to or not because we know more and we don't. You know, all we've done to get sobriety is we've gone through a lot of life's experiences and we've learned a lot of things by the pain that was inflicted through them. The things I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous are only things that have helped me live better. They're not things that make me any gigantic genius or anything special. What they do is they allow me to live a life that I never knew existed. And it's only because of the unity in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I'm truly looking at the unity in Alcoholics Anonymous, rather than worry about what I've got to say, I'm going to worry about what the next guy's got to say because he may need to get it out and he may save somebody's life. I'm just glad I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. The next is Don. Oh, we've got two Dons.
Which one?
Either one.
That's you. I guess it's me. Thank you. Hi, I'm Don Fusick. I'm an alcoholic. Member of the Tuesday Night Step Group, sobriety day, January 5th, 1979. And I love this theme of unity because Dan's exactly right. You know, you come in, I was told you suit up, you show up, and people ask you to do something, you do it, you get your stuff ready to go and do it in the time that's asked. They say share 2 or 3 minutes at a meeting, or in this case 5 minutes. You share for 4.5 minutes and sit down, you know. And so you don't have to adjust the clock, though, don't worry. But one of the greatest things about unity for me is just the, you know, we're not a glum lot. We have a lot of fun, and we laugh, and we, you know, people, sometimes I'll take people to an open meeting and say, I can't believe those people are laughing at you. You had 2 drunk driving tickets in 3 days. I'm like, yeah, it's funny now because, I mean, it saved my life. But at the time, it wasn't too funny. But, you know, but it helps me. It's one of my greatest assets. I tell people that, and they, boom, they know I'm an alcoholic. There's no more questions. And like, oh, I can listen to this guy. He may help me. You know, and it's a beautiful thing. That's all, excuse me, this thing boils down to is, just carrying this message to the still suffering alcoholic and being the best that you can, you know, to do that. And just staying sober. And sober means, you know, practicing principles the best of your ability, take the steps thoroughly, holding nothing back. What? Holding nothing back. And that's what the step 7 used to say, humbly on our knees, ask him to remove all our defects of character, holding nothing back. And that's the whole deal. And if you don't hold anything back, you got nothing to hide, it doesn't matter. And then you can carry the message freely and be full of unity and I'm a firm believer in having a home group. Stay with that home group. Work through things. Like Dan said, you can always run off with the coffee pot, but what does that get you? Most of us were running our whole lives before we got here, but we're not running no more. We're practicing principles. We're having a great life, and thank you for letting me share. That's all I got.
Thank you, Don. Now, the next one is also a Don.
I'm Don, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 17th, 1975. I go to the Seeking Serenity Group. I sponsor guys, and I have a sponsor that sponsors guys, and a sponsor that has a sponsor that sponsors guys, and a sponsor, my sponsor's sponsor, has a sponsor that sponsors guys. So anyway, the whole lineage goes down there. I will sponsor women, but only my wife. I've sponsored her before, but only if we don't sleep together. And that's usually what happens when I try to sponsor her, too. So anybody who knows my wife, she's not even here. She took off. She doesn't even get to hear me talk about her. I love this program. I really do. I had a really accelerated drinking career. The whole thing lasted. I mean, alcoholic drinking was probably only about 2-3 years of my big 5-year drinking history. I qualified. I qualified for these rooms. I qualified for these rooms even a year before I decided. I don't know that I decided, but it was decided for me that I probably should do something about my drinking. I was in the Army at the time, and I was calling up from different states in the morning saying, "I'm not going to be at work today." And I had so many beautiful enablers that worked with me that would say, "Okay, Don." I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe I'll go call the nearest alcohol center, whatever nearest Army base there is here. And no, Don, just come on back. We'll cover for you. And, that worked for a little while. God bless them. They did what they could. But I'm an alcoholic, and I pushed the limits, and I screwed people over, and I did everything, that we always do. But when I got a home group, finally, I went into treatment, and I got out of treatment, and about 6 months later, I got out of the Army, and I consider my roots of sobriety to be on Long Island, New York, and my sister had already been sober about, not quite a year, maybe, something. So she grabbed a hold of me as soon as I got there and said, "Okay, this is going to be your home group," and she gave me this, and what I love, and we were talking about strong home groups and people who want to do service. Sean had mentioned that there are you don't always have to get drafted into position. Sometimes people are there, and sometimes you're pushed into it. They had a coffee maker, but they said he needs an assistant, and so I became the assistant coffee maker. They really didn't need an assistant, but they wanted me to have something to do, And that's the unity, that's the love that we have for each other, when we come in these rooms. I was thinking, we have a code. We have a code. Everybody know what our code is?
Love and tolerance.
Right? Love and tolerance. Yeah, love and tolerance. That is, to me, is a unifier. And fortunately, it comes in the 10th step, right? Where we have to deal with everybody on our, on a daily basis. We find that we often need a lot of love and tolerance of each other, of others. And I love to have a code. I like John Wayne has a code, and so I have a code. And it may not be the same as John. I won't shoot you if you don't agree with me, but I will love you until you do agree with me. But what's beautiful about this program, and when I came in, I thought everybody thought the same, in the groups, everybody thought the same and everything. But after a while, if you get into service in different areas, if you've ever been to a district meeting or been to an assembly, my goodness, we don't all think the same, But there's a process, and we're unified by that process, and we love each other. We may not always agree, but we love each other, and we tolerate each other, And I thank God that people loved and tolerated me until I could love and tolerate myself. But that's what I got. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. I think we're going to have Bill next.
Good morning. Is it morning still? Oh, okay. I'm Bill. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bill.
Date is 7/27/75. The day the whole world changed. For me and for all those poor bastards that I used to drink with that couldn't get a golf game together, I was able to do it drunk or sober. But you know, unity is the topic, and unity is how we keep the meetings going. And I found a meeting exactly 10 years ago in Buckley, Washington, and I said, nobody's sober in Buckley, Washington. Ever. They're a bunch of loggers and cement finishers, and I drank in funny places, but that was a funny place to go. And you know something? I love it, because they have a strong belief in God up there, and that's what saves my life every day. In the morning, I get up and say, God, help me through the day. And I have some, I was laughing about these people talking about children of 40 this and 40 that. My daughter's 40, my son's 46. Holy geez. Last night, Elizabeth over here, how old are you, Bill? I says, you're trying to make a move here? And she says, no, I just want to know how you live that long. Sorry, Elizabeth. We've been going to meetings for a long time in different places, you know. But you know, it's the fellowship that keeps me alive. It's the family that I acquired when I came through the doors. The people that I meet on a daily basis. I'm still in sales, and I actually do some of this stuff that they're doing upstairs with the hotels, and I deal with Koreans and East Indians. And believe it or not, they trust me. Now, that's something to think about, because of a long time ago, they couldn't trust me. And today, I'm able to walk in and present my package that I'm going to do for them, and they're really nice. And they treat me like a human being, and I treat them like human beings, which is a lot different than what I used to do. You know, I listened to that guy last night. Kind of reminded me of a lot of the crazy stuff I did, you know. But we recover. We get better. We do it one day at a time. We do it by just asking for God's help in my case. Whatever God of your understanding is fine with you. But in this case, I looked in the mirror, didn't know who I was. I said, God help me, and I wound up in a meeting within 24 hours because I called a guy that was sober for a year, and I said, I need some help. I think I have a problem with alcohol. He says, no kidding. He didn't. He really didn't say that, but that's what he said, and he took me to my first meeting, and all of a sudden I said, gee, maybe I'm an alcoholic. Is that possible? You know, I was a heavy drinker. I drank an awful lot, you know. But I, you know, my life today is, I can't even have caffeine, you know, like coffee. I can't drink coffee. What a wimp. But the other thing is, I'm reading the newspaper. Who the hell read the newspaper when you were a drinker? And I'm reading the comic strip, and there was a comic strip the other day that just cracked me up, and it's two guys, Pickles is the name of the thing in the Tribune. So these two guys are sitting on a bench. This is not AA literature, Dan. There's two guys sitting at a bench, and he says, you know, our relationship has gone on for a long, long time, and even though we don't see each other, we don't talk to each other. And the other fellow says, our relationship will get a whole lot better if you don't talk at all. So I'm done.
Thanks, Bill. Could I have that last minute? Okay. Last on this panel is Jim.
My name's Jim, and I'm an alcoholic. And as Jim here always tells me, the Jims have it. So I don't know what that means, but it sounds good when he says it. So, sobriety date is September 4, 1973. I was 12-stepped into Alcoholics Anonymous by two men who, one was 10 years sober and the other was 9 months sober, and they came to my home. I had called Alcoholics Anonymous. They came to my home and they talked to me about AA and not drinking and all the things that they did, and eventually, in a very short time, they took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been very fortunate. I've been sober since that first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know why all that happened, but it happened. And I was sitting here thinking, you know, before I came to AA, and I was working in a parts house in Bellevue, Washington, and I used to go over to Seattle every so often, go up on Otter Row, which was on Capitol Hill, and pick up parts. And I used to drive by the Oddfellows Hall, there at Broadway and Pine. And I always saw these losers hanging out on the street there. They were all weird-looking people and strange and all of that. Well, what happened was I was taken to what they called the Big Hall one Friday night for a speaker's meeting, and it was at the Oddfellows Hall. And here were all these people that I'd seen on the street, were all active members of Alcoholics Anonymous and had been sober, a lot of them, for a very long time. And I heard some of their names mentioned here today, or yesterday, or Friday, whenever it was. And thank God that they were there. You know, they were the I don't know what you want to call it. They were the ground roots of Alcoholics Anonymous in Seattle at that time. But I was sitting here thinking of unity and how I could talk about that, and I don't really know what to say about it other than the fact that when I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and all these men and women were there, and they talked to me. They took me into a beginner step one, and they really beat the hell out of me. You know, anyway, they talked to me, and I remember thinking that I need to do something different. And doing something different was to do something different because nothing had ever worked for me. And I made a decision that I was going to do what they suggested, and they suggested all the things that they suggested. And so, anyway, I had a real problem with, I mean, like I've heard many times over the weekend, and, you know, I'm here, but leave me alone. And they were all over me, and help me, and phone numbers. Phones weighed 975 pounds back then, I don't know. But, you know, all of these things. And they would call my home. Why'd you get my phone number? I don't know. You know. How you doing, Jim? You know. Took me a long time to figure out what they really wanted to do was to help me. And I had to learn how to do that. And I got a sponsor, and I wound up doing the 12 steps with my sponsor. I mean, sitting down and writing out a first step and a fourth and fifth step. And I'm not telling you this was easy stuff for me. It was very difficult, but I was able to do it. So I don't know how to put 42 years into 5 minutes, but what happened after that first year, I went to my home group, and they had a birthday cake for me, 1 year of sobriety. And so, you know, they put this birthday cake out. Got Happy Birthday Jim all over it and all this stuff. And they get up and they sing Happy Birthday to me. And I'm looking around and I'm thinking, God, you know, I've been sober a whole year and all I get's a lousy birthday cake. And so I'm kind of perturbed. And so then what happens is Peggy Lee, she's going through my head. And she's singing that song, Is That All There Is? You know? And so I'm thinking about that, and then I'm looking around, and I'm thinking. But then I started thinking about what went into that first year of getting sober and staying sober, and all the changes that had gone on in 1 year, and all the meetings that I had gone to, and all the people that were there that talked to me and helped me, took me to meeting, blew smoke in my face, God, you know, all the stuff they did. And it was a lot, and it really made me realize that you know, to achieve from where I came in to having 1 year of sobriety, there was a lot of work that went into that. And I've always kind of thought about that, is that if you want to get to C, you got to do, if you want to go from A to C, you got to do B. And B is working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and going to meetings and doing all the stuff you got to do. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. And I believe we can excuse this panel. Next panel, George. Hole in Donut. George not here? Okay. Will. Howard. Jim, I'll be next, and Donna, who will be last. Yeah, that's it. Wait a minute. Yeah, George is not here. No, and I didn't. Chuck, you're not here.
Preston isn't either.
Huh?
Preston.
Who?
Preston.
No, 40 isn't the limit. Anyone with 31 years or more is hasn't spoke. And okay. All right. On the next panel. What's your first name?
Susan. S-U-S-A-N.
And?
The Jim's Habit.
The Jim's Habit. I know.
My name's Will. I'm an alcoholic.
Will.
I got sober on April 7th, 1980. And I got sober in Los Angeles at the beach down there, Manhattan Beach. And I didn't get here on my own. I had a nudge from the judge. And I could have used AA long before I got sober, but I was a blackout drinker. Never heard of AA other than my grandparents went. And I mostly knew about my grandmother, who didn't like AA. She said they swore a lot and did nothing but talk about their problems. And, you know, that was all I knew about AA. And I got that first court, that first nudge. And, you know, I was too young, really. I had more drinking to do. So I went out and ripped it for another couple of years and got back. And this has just been an incredible life. Conventions have been a big part of my sobriety. My first conference was in May of 1980 at Palm Springs. And it was just incredible. Just an overwhelming experience. And the main thing I got out of that was holding hands with everyone at the end of the meeting and saying that Lord's Prayer, which was really a spiritual experience for me. And I've been coming back ever since. And I just hate to miss a conference. Today, I don't go as many meetings as I used to. I was really active in the beginning. And, you know, I was thinking about unity, too, since that seems to be the thing. But the fellowship was really stressed when I was new. And I went to hundreds of meetings. When I was new, I could get to 3 or 4 a day. And that's what I did. And it wasn't until I was a year and a half sober that I really got into some pain and needed to work the steps. And I was able to do that and work the steps 3 or 4 times with great people. And now I have a method to take other people through. And people like Tom and people I've known over the years. And it's just been a great, great thing. And it's what's kept me sober all these years. So I'm really glad to be here. Great conference. Thanks to Tom and the committee. And this has been an awesome thing. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Will. Howard?
My name is Howard Kellogg. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 17th, 1974. For that, I'm very grateful. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous not of my own volition. I was sent here via treatment program, via a captain in the United States Air Force. I was 23 years of age. I'd only been drinking for a little over 5 years. And I was not an alcoholic. Yeah. The way you get alcoholism is you catch it here in AA. And so I just came to one too many meetings, caught alcoholism, and stuck around. AA saved my life. AA saved my life. You know, I didn't want to be here. I didn't think I had a problem. But you know what? The people in Alcoholics Anonymous loved me, took me to meetings, mentored me, and showed me how to live life sober. I was stationed at a little place called RAF Upper Hayford in the United Kingdom, just outside of Oxford, England. And I'll never forget going to Oxford to a meeting, walking in the room, and Alex was sitting there. And Alex was an old guy. Of course, everybody was old back then. And Alex was a Scotsman. And I'd walk into the meeting and Alex would say, "Here comes the colonist." He called me the colonist. And they just loved me. And they took me all over the place. I'd go to meetings in Nottingham. Got to go up to Sherwood Forest, to Nottingham. Went to meetings in London, Brighton, Banbury, Bicester, all kinds of different places. You had to travel all over the place to get to meetings because that's the way it was. And if you wanted to hit a seventh meeting during the week, you had to go all the way to London, and we'd take a train down to London to go to a meeting. And a bunch of us get together, get on the train, go to London, go to a movie, go to a meeting, go to dinner, take train back home to Oxford. That's the way it was. But it was the love of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that helped me stay sober, and the unity. It's very simple. It's these people getting together, taking this little colonist that was 23 years old to all these meetings all over Europe, all over England. And I got hooked on conferences too, really quickly. My first AA conference was the All England Wales Convention in the southern tip of England. And it was right after the 1974 World Services Conference in London. And all the people that attended that conference stayed for the All England Wales Convention. And there were people from all over Europe, Africa, South America, North America, all over the world. There were over 1,200 people at that meeting, at that conference. And they had a dance. I had just turned 24, and it was 1974. You know, disco was in. And so you got me outfitted in my beautiful burgundy slacks, white sports coat, white shoes, white belt, pink shirt. I was going. And you hooked me in, and I've been coming back ever since, chasing the disco. Love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Howard. Chuck, you're up.
Hi, my name's Chuck Tibbs. I'm an alcoholic. And I got sober, or I had my last drink sometime before 11:30 at night on September 8th of 1972. I know that because I checked a booking slip. And they got upset with me. I didn't get arrested for drunk driving. I couldn't shift gears and get the car moving when the cop waved me through the intersection. So, anyway, I had my adventures in the Air Force. Howard is 10 years younger than I am to the day. And he got here. I was 21 years old when I'm standing before a full bird colonel with two PhDs. I know that because I kept officers' records for 3rd Weather Wing, stationed just outside of Omaha. And I guess he didn't know that Alcoholics Anonymous existed. He just sent me to jail and kicked me out. But the Air Force knew something 10 years, when Howard got here, 10 years later, I had 10 and a half years of drinking to do. Unity for me, in one sense, is I can go anywhere and I'm a part of the group. Whether it's the French Riviera or up in Seattle or, Depot Bay, Oregon, or wherever I might happen to go. You know, straight 12 in the village, and a lot of international conventions. I'm there, I'm in it. That was an amazing thing to discover the first time I took a long vacation to the East Coast and wound up at a meeting just outside of Provincetown, and I was in that group. It was terrific. When I was sitting there, I had a whole bunch of things I was going to say. I can't remember what they were now. My home group is a senior moment. That's kind of obvious. But we got some kids who've gotten sober in that group, you know, some youngsters. And so anybody's welcome and anybody can share. 9:30 a.m. Monday, Wednesday, Friday at the same location as AMAA and Emmanuel Press there in a different room. But we got our sign outside too. So they got their sign, we got our sign. I took my boot camp 4.5 years in the Pacific group. And they took me in hand at my second meeting. I went to that hall for that second meeting because at the first meeting I went to, they were having a good time. They were laughing and scratching. It made no sense to me. But I went back there the following night, and these guys got a hold of me. And they tricked me through that first week until the following Tuesday night, I had a home group, a temporary sponsor, and shit, I was in it, you know. As far as I know, the first guy who grabbed me, well, hauled me through the door at my very first meeting, a guy named Harry, nicknamed Harry DeWino. I don't know how Harry ultimately did, but his sponsor at that time is still sober in Ocean Shores. The woman who was secretary of the Thursday night meeting, I just talked to her last week, she's still sober and going strong. With all her health issues, she's happening. The guy who maybe really saved my life with the talk, if anybody ever did that, it was a guy named Marvin, and he also directed that bunch that were tricking me through that week. Found that out years later. Marvin is still alive and sober. My first sponsor died sober. My last sponsor died sober. No one before him. As far as I know, I don't think any of the people who sponsored me wound up going back out. My first sponsor's sponsor is still sober. I got sober in 58. His sponsor died with just under 40 years. I assume we've got a few new people in here. This thing really does work. And there's nothing special or no special wisdom about those of us who I think, I consider young people in AA who stayed, okay? Because we had to be up here able to articulate anything. You know, we move a little funny, some of us. But that's okay. We're moving. And I better move off the podium. And this has really been a great conference. This has just been fantastic. It gets better every year. And thank you.
Thank you, Chuck. Jim, you're up. Wait a minute. Oh. Okay. Oh, no. Next in line. I can swear he says that Jim's have it.
Hi, I'm next in line, and I'm an alcoholic. Whose name is Wayne. I think unity is probably the most important topic we could have in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was thinking today, the third tradition says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. See? And this seems to be tough because we'll have meetings on the third tradition. See? And what does that mean? The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. But they will talk an hour. If it's an hour and a half, we'll talk an hour and a half about everything that isn't the requirement. See, because it's just too simple. But what that does, it says that we have a common bond. Everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous has at least one thing in common with everybody else in Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay. Then the fifth tradition says that we have one primary purpose, to stay sober and help other alcoholics to recover from alcoholism. So now we have one thing in common with every other member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we all have one purpose. That causes unity. That creates unity. In the service manual, Article 26, I think, 5, it says, Warranty 5, I think it says, Alcoholics Anonymous will take no punitive action against any person for any reason. See, and to that I like to add, no matter what. Because that makes Alcoholics Anonymous a safe place or a place where we're welcome for everyone. That's unity. Last night, I had the pleasure of spending a weekend with Ricky, the young man that got the big book. You want to see unity? Did you listen and watch when he stood up with the least amount of time in the room? All of us here were focused on him, and he was the most important person in the room because he had the least amount of time. I'm interested in how, you know, we like to do accurate inventories, and it says that self-appraisals are rarely accurate. Okay? And I like how Alcoholics Anonymous counts. See, because if you ask Alcoholics Anonymous, they'll tell you we got 2 million members. There's 50 states. If you had 2,000 members in every state, that would give you 1 million people in the United States. Then we're in 190 plus other countries. Do you think we could pick up another million people in another 190 other countries? See, what it is GSO has determined for us, okay, how we count membership. Okay? In the big book, it says you're a member if you say you are. If you have a desire to stop drinking, you're a member. When GSO counts, they say you're not a member unless you're registered with a home group. By the way, my home group is Spanaway, Washington, and my sobriety date is December 31st, 1980. And the gift that I am realizing from Alcoholics Anonymous for the last couple of years is an inner peace. And that started happening when I started to treat the third step prayer like it was a deal I made with God, because I made a deal with him. It's take away my difficulties, the victory over them, and if you read through the rest of it, you'll see we're saying, I'll do this if you'll do this. And as long as I keep my word, I don't have to worry. All I have to do is practice the principles of these steps, and the outcome comes out. And that creates an inner peace that no matter if the outcome is of my choosing or something that Wayne wanted or didn't want, it's okay. That's a gift. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. Preston?
My name is Preston. I are an alcoholic. And I want to welcome anybody that's new. I don't see Ricky here this morning. It had his 14 days yesterday. Hope he stayed sober last night. Yeah, or at least went home and read that book. Anyway, my sobriety birth date is March 3rd, 1984. That's the last day I had a drink at about 6:30 in the morning. I got out of jail for my fourth DUI. And I got to thinking about it, really it was my fifth. Because I really found out when I got my first one, I was 13 years old. My father taught me how to drive dump trucks and motorcycles when I was seven. And I borrowed his 60 Chevy with a 348 engine. And I got drunk and ran a highway patrolman off the road in Ventura County. That was my first drunk driving, but they didn't call it that then, and they didn't throw me in jail for that. You know, and so my lowest one was 0.37, my highest one was 0.39. And I found out 4.0, if I was on sodium pentothal and they cut my leg off like they did in 99, that's the same as being under sodium pentothal, and you will never be closer to death and still be alive in that condition. And so I was probably 0.40 several times that I didn't get caught, because I used to use other drugs, you know. I did speed, so I'd be a wide awake drunk anyway. You know, and in Vietnam I only smoked heroin so I wouldn't get addicted to it. Ask me how that worked later. Anyway, I am an alcoholic. Four DUIs qualifies me as that. I lost the ability to control my drinking. And I had my first sponsor, I asked him to be my sponsor. He had 21 years of sobriety, he was 70 years old. And he says, well, I won't answer that right now. He says, I have a suggestion for you though. He says, read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous from the beginning to page 60. And at the end of page 60, it says, being convinced, we were at step three. He says, read that, and he says, he says, I suggest you read two or three pages a day, and if you want to read more, read them over again. And I did that. And I'd been to a few meetings, and I was told I had to go through a drunk driving program. Third hour of education, I blurted out, I says, damn, I'm really sick. And I found out that I was sick trying to get well, not bad trying to get good. You know, and it's a disease, and yes, I did a lot of sinful things when I was drinking, you know. And I did a few when I was sober, but not quite as many. Never got a drunk driving when I wasn't drinking, you know. I didn't get in trouble every time I drank, but every time I did get in trouble, I was drinking, you know. So anyway, Alcoholics Anonymous works good. It's a real simple program. Work the 12 steps, change your whole frickin' life, and things will get different. You know, they don't always get good. I've had a lot of things happen. I lost a wife almost 3 years ago, March 28th. It'll be 3 years. You know, we had 26 wonderful years together, and somebody in AA told me, this, you got to learn to get over that stuff. And I says, you're crazy. You know, I don't want to get over the best thing that ever happened in my life, you know. Second to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have never had that. And I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in it and the love that's been shared here. And, you know, if you're wondering where the first step is, and being a member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 30, we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were an alcoholic, and that is the first step of recovery. Thank you.
Thank you, Preston. All right. Thank you for all for listening to our panel. I'll turn it over to Tom.